Mr. Roberts, Reel 1. When did you join the Army, Mr. Roberts?
I joined the Territorial Army in the winter of 1939, approximately January, February time, as far as I remember. That was in Leeds.
Why did you join?
Well, it seemed that there was a lot of sort of patriotic feeling around at the time, and one of my best friends joined, and we all seemed to be in it together, and so I wanted to do something, so I just went along to the local territorial barracks, and of course they took me in.
What job had you been doing before you joined?
I was a laboratory technician at the medical school, as part of the University of Leeds. And I'd been working there since I left school at 16, so I'd had about 3 years' experience in that line of work, in a medical laboratory.
So what unit did you join?
I joined a local unit of the Royal Army Medical Corps, which was one of the only two territorial units that were in that particular area that I knew of.
Did you apply for that unit?
Yes, I enlisted directly into it, yes.
And what type of work did you find yourself doing after you joined?
Well, after I joined as a territorial and prior to the outbreak of war, which was in September of the same year, we were simply doing basic training, square drill and so on at the local barracks. We had a fortnight's annual camp at Tidworth in the August of 1939. And that was a bit of a disaster because the weather was terrible and we were all pretty raw and new to the army again. So we were pretty thankful to get home at the end of August and back to the comforts of civilised living, but of course a couple of days later the war started and we were remobilised. In fact, no, about a week later it would be. The war started, so we were mobilised a couple of days in advance and we carried on from there with as a unit which had been mustered and mobilised at that time.
And where did your training continue after the war broke out?
I think it seemed to be a fairly makeshift operation as far as we could gather. We were taken to a local teacher's training college on the outskirts of Leeds. And this comprised several colleges, residential hostels built in the grounds of quite a large park. And it had been recently occupied by students, of course, and our first initiation to training at that particular time and in that place was to empty all the furniture from these hostels and get them aboard furniture vans and have them taken away for the buildings to be used as a training depot for future recruits. So we did a fair amount of, again, basic training, drill, lectures, so forth. But I'd say 50% of our time was sort of training, 50% of the time was this furniture removal operation and the preparation of the place as a depot for recruits. And that went on for about 2 months, I suppose.
Did you take up any work in these early days connected with your technical background?
No. It was purely basic training, and in fact we were used pretty well as workhorses. There was very little in the way of anything practical that we could do in the circumstances that we were in at the time, of course.
When the British Expeditionary Force went to France, were you involved with that?
Yes, we moved out to France in about January, I think it was, of 1940. We spent the winter in France, or most of the winter, 1940. We were located at a place called Etaps, which was not very far from Le Touquet, somewhere between Le Touquet and Boulogne. And it was our job there to establish a military hospital, but it was temporary in the sense that it was entirely on the canvas. And again, our function for the whole of the time that we were there was erecting these enormous canvas marquees and marquees of different shapes and sizes. We all became pretty adept at putting them together. They were enormous things, of course. The large ones, which were for use as wards, were about I think they were designed to hold about 100 beds, patients, and so on. And then we had all the auxiliary tents, operating theatres on the canvas, and so on. And the only place not on the canvas was a Nissen hut, which I was allocated to as a part of the X-ray department there. And at the time we evacuated the place, we were just installing X-ray machinery in this Nissen hut. The whole of the canvas the various marquees and so on had been erected, and the place was just about shipshape, but we'd had no casualties after that time.
About what time was this? Which year?
Well, this was 1940. And we were there from, as I say, January approximately. And, of course, the evacuation was about the last week in May when we moved out. So I'd say that the time that we were putting the finishing touches to the completion of this tented hospital was about the beginning of May, the middle of May, thereabouts.
Where were you personally evacuated from?
We came from Boulogne. We were moved out quite unexpectedly. We had no information. We heard rumours that there'd been a breakthrough by the Germans at a place called Sedan on the Maginot Line. But as far as we were concerned, Sedan was just a name, and it could have been a thousand miles away. I don't think anyone really took much notice of the fact. But within a week or 10 days, we were simply told to take what we could carry, and we were moved out, again not being told what was happening. And by various means, we found ourselves being on the road to Boulogne. We walked part of the way, and then we picked up some transport, which seemed was going in that direction, and we ended up on the quay side. We were a bit scattered by then, but we did finally get together pretty well, as far as I remember. And the other thing I remember, of course, there was constant bombing, and there was quite a lot of aerial activity. And well, one of the things that does stick in my mind was a French ambulance train on the quayside. And it was filled with French and Belgian wounded. But there were there was no staff, there were no personnel to look after them. I don't know what had happened, but there was a train, there were the wounded, and no one with them. So we were told by our commanding officer to start unloading them, which we did. And this was a bit hairy, because we were obviously stretchers are not easy to manipulate, on and off, trained and so. There was some bombing and machine gunning going on at the time. And we got the stretcher by the quay side, and then after a while, the the small, I think it was called a Biarritz. It was an Isle of Wight package steamer. I'm not very certain. There were two ships involved. We went out to France in one and came back in the other. One was the Biarritz and the other was the Ben McCree. I'm not quite sure which we went in and which we went back in. But I think it was the Biarritz that picked us up. And so she berthed, again under considerable sort of fire and bombing and so on. We loaded the wounded aboard the ship, and quite a number of them were sort of not very sure whether they wanted to go to England, but it seemed the only thing to do at the time. Otherwise the train was in considerable danger from the bombing and so on. So we got them all aboard and finally cast off and got moving. And we had a fairly uneventful trip across to Dover, where again we had to unload the wounded. What happened to them after, I don't know. I did hear, in fact, that some arrangement with the Germans, the French and Belgian troops who had been brought over, perhaps against their will, were allowed to return, and perhaps some of them did, but I never saw or heard about any of them after that.
What time?
Sorry? We ourselves, after we'd been assembled and had a roll call and so on, we were put aboard a train, and we had it was a night time by then, of course. We didn't know where we were being sent to, but in fact we ended up at Peterborough, and we had a temporary billet there where we were able to sort ourselves out and get reformed again.
What type of work did you do back in the UK?
After returning to Peterborough, we were given, I think it was 48 hours, maybe 72 hours leave. We were allowed to go home. And as I lived in Leeds, it was on a fairly direct route from Peterborough. It didn't take very long by train. So we obviously were very happy to do this. But that evening, after I returned home, I received a telegram saying return immediately, that leave had been cancelled, and so in fact I waited till the following morning, got the train back and returned to my unit. There seemed to be no particular reason for this, except that we did have a civic reception by the we were put on parade and were received by the mayor of Peterborough, and they had an official greeting for us in one of the public buildings in the town. And apart from this, nothing happened. So I really don't know. I suppose there was a general state of emergency which justified our recall. But I spent about perhaps a month in Peterborough. Then I was told I was being posted to London, to the Royal Army Medical College at Millbank. And I'd been listed to take a course in radiography, which was the subject, in fact, which I'd been mustered for because I'd had some experience of my earlier work at the university in radiography. But I'd done nothing up to this time, and it was decided, obviously, that it would be a good thing for me to take an official army training. This would take 3 months.
Was this at Millbank?
This was at Millbank, at the Royal Army Medical College. So I arrived at Millbank in about August. This was 1940. There were not enough people there to start the course, so once again we were doing sort of general duties around the college. We didn't start the official course until I'd been there about a month. In the meantime, the Blitz started in London, so that during the 3 months I was there on this course, London had the worst of the Blitz and the bombing and the fire raids and so forth. So that lasted until about the end of the year, I suppose. It would be December, or maybe January 1941, when I left London.
Now, in the next year, in the second half of 1941, you found yourself embarked on a ship at Liverpool. Can you tell me how that came about?
Yes, again, it's a rather confused story. Perhaps I should go back to the time I left the medical college in London. I was posted to Plymouth. There was a makeshift hospital there at Devonport, which in fact was a converted girls' school. It was being used as an army hospital. And I managed to get in a bit of actual hospital work there, and I was working in the X-ray department and spent about 2 months, I suppose. Incidentally, Plymouth was very heavily bombed during this period, so once again we felt to be at the receiving end of things. And then after, as I say, perhaps 2 months, maybe 3 months, I was informed that I'd been promoted to the rank of sergeant, and I had to report to Hatfield House in Hertfordshire. I did this and discovered that Hatfield House, which was of course a very beautiful stately home, had been taken over in part as a convalescent depot by the army. But again, the unit I was posted to was not part of the hospital, part of the army hospital arrangement. It was a unit composed of recruits, and we were billeted in a Masonic hall in the village itself. And I was doing basic training again, instructing the recruits in simply field drill, the square bashing, field lectures and so on. And back to basics once again. I had no part in the actual hospital arrangements in Hatfield House. We were completely separate, but there was obviously an army medical corps unit, or part of one, based in the house itself. But my duties didn't involve any part of that. We were strictly a unit being formed, and my job was to instruct these recruits again.
So, was it after this period in Hertfordshire that you went to Liverpool on the ship?
Yes, pretty well. I had a spell in Colchester. I was sent there as a replacement for a radiographer at the Army Hospital in Colchester. I spent maybe a month or 6 weeks. I was recalled to Hatfield, and then I was informed that I could take a 7 days embarkation leave. And then I had to report to the Crookham camp.
Crookham?
Crookham, that's right. So I went home, spent 7 days at home. I assumed it was, I don't think I was told it was embarkation leave, I assumed it was for some reason. Reported to Crookham, which is an enormous army depot, of course. And I didn't know anyone. I was just one NCO almost, hundreds of others who were around the place. I found myself on a roll call with maybe a couple of hundred personnel. Not medical corps, we were all kinds of units. People from various units being assembled there. We were kitted out with tropical gear, tropical kit, including solar topies and so on in those days. So it became clear that we were intended to go to a hot place. And after a week or so there, having been kitted out, given the inoculations and so on, we found ourselves on this train and arriving in Liverpool and by the quayside waiting to embark. Again, it was still a very motley collection of people. And there was no one there whom I knew or had had any previous experience with or training with. And again, all kinds of units there were, by this time, I suppose, a couple of thousand. Artillery, infantry, various corps and so on. And I was with a mixed bag of NCOs, as I say, about 200 of us. And all total strangers and from various parts of the service.
Which ship did you personally go on?
It was a ship called the Dominion Monarch. She was a, I understood, a New Zealand... she was a Shaw Saville boat. And was on the New Zealand, had been on the New Zealand run, I understand, but she was fairly new and a very, very nice, very well-equipped ship. Very modern.
And what route did the convoy take?
We took the long way around. We our first port of call was Freetown, Sierra Leone, and the west coast of Africa. We were part of a convoy, of course. From there we proceeded to Cape Town. But one of the interesting things about the trip, which I recall, was that one of the Royal Navy convoy vessels was the HMS Repulse, which I assume was on its way out to the Far East. Although it didn't go the whole way with us, it was diverted at some stage, but she accompanied us most of the way, and we sort of became used to seeing her alongside part of the convoy. A couple of destroyers, of course. But otherwise, we had a very pleasant trip. The next port of call was Cape Town. We were very well received by the population, had a very nice 2 or 3 days there. Then we carried on to Ceylon.
So was it a totally uneventful voyage from the point of view of hostilities?
From our point of view it was, yes. Whether there were alarms or whatever, of course, we didn't hear about them. We were running, we were using the mine cutting wires streaming alongside the ships and so forth most of the way, and we noticed quite a bit of action from time to time by the Royal Navy vessels, but as far as we were concerned, there were no alarms at all. It was a very, very pleasant trip, in fact, and from the accommodation point of view it was quite good, because as senior NCOs I had quite a nice cabin with 4 NCOs to a cabin, and the appointments, the food, everything. It was a very pleasant memory, in fact. One of the few pleasant memories of the war up to that time.
Yeah. What month did you arrive in Singapore?
Well, it would be November, but I'm not very clear as to whether it was sort of mid or early November. I think it was late November, in fact, because I didn't see very much of Singapore. We were first of all posted to a transit camp from the ship, again as a mixed bag of army personnel, none of us knowing anyone else, apart from our acquaintances on the voyage. And of course, spending a few days in this transit camp, I managed to get a couple of evenings in Singapore itself. And then the medical personnel got together and were sent up to Johor Bahru, which was the causeway on the southern tip of Johor.
Before we talk about Johor Bahru, could I ask you about the atmosphere in Singapore? Was it tense or not?
No. It was totally relaxed. Thing which impressed us, of course, those of us who had been in, who had come out from England, was the complete contrast. There was no blackout at the time. Life in the city, the little I saw of it, seemed to proceed normally. There were no obvious preparations being made for anything. But as I say, perhaps I was in a very strange environment. Everything was new, totally different. Naturally, things were very confused from my point of view because I didn't know where I was going to be sent, and I didn't feel to be part of any coherent unit. And my impression of that particular period of time was sort of confusion in the army camp and sort of atmosphere of general relaxation and easy living for the rest of the time.
What type of work were you set on at Johor Bahru?
Well, it seemed to be my lot from my previous experience in the army and so on. I found myself in charge of re-equipping a partly built hospital, which had been, I understood, built by the Sultan of Johor for the people of his state. A very modern place, but it was incomplete. There were no beds again, there was hardly any equipment. It was about a three-story building. And having been posted there, again, medical personnel from other places had been posted also. And we found ourselves having to re-equip this relatively empty shell of a building.